Can you sports and social distance? Yes, you can. You can play rooftop tennis. The ATP Tour put this out. I would advise, while you're staying healthy here, do not chip and charge. This is not the time to play serve and volley. Stay on your side of the court. Stay socially distanced from the net. But it's a good way to think about maybe slowly returning to sports and sports activities. Welcome to Lunch Talk Live here on NBCSN. Mike Tirico with you. It is NFL draft week, so we're going to be heavy, obviously, on NFL, college. We've got a bunch of guests in that vein. The show is always available for you. The podcast, you can go back and listen to any of the 10 episodes that we have done already with a ton of unbelievable guests, and also our NBC Sports YouTube channel, which has a boatload of content that our entire NBC Sports family are creating during this time when we're all looking for a little bit of something to do. And when you download today or when you watch live, Chase Young, who many think will be the number two pick in the draft, will join us, the defensive end from Ohio State. Mark Ingram, the running back from the Ravens. Dan Mullen, the coach of Florida, the Mighty Gators. And the Cunninghams, Vashti, the Olympic hopeful high jumper, and her dad, who many of you know, Randall Cunningham, from his 16-year NFL career. They are all ahead. So is Peter King. And I want to get this NFL note out of the way right away. The Patriots put out this morning these pictures of their new uniforms. So this will be the new look for the Pats, who join the Bucks, the Falcons, and the Browns, all with new uniforms. So we've got a lot of change going on around the NFL, but the biggest change happens on Thursday when the draft comes and Peter King, Football Morning in America column. At how many words today, Peter? Some over 10,000, I would imagine?
400. And Mike, there's too much going on. You just simply can't cover it all. And by the way, there's a draft this week.
Yeah, exactly. But by the way, right now, Peter, knowing your fondness for the state you were born in, Massachusetts, this is Patriots Day. It would be about middle of the third inning of the annual 11 a.m. start in Boston. Usually marathons going on, and the Red Sox are playing. Red Sox-Indians would be about middle third right now of some three-plus-hour American League baseball game. We're missing that, but we're not missing the draft. And, Peter, let's start with your mock draft. That is the crux of your mega column here today. Go back for us, if you will, a little bit of history. Dr. Z, the late, great Paul Zimmerman, would always do that mock draft with Sports Illustrated. You were part of that as well during your time there. And really, it was one shot at the mock draft here towards the end with a lot of insight. You'd take a lot of input from folks around the league for a few weeks before you come out with your mock draft.
Well, Paul Zimmerman was the guru of mock drafts because he would start right after the Super Bowl and he would call and he would never, ever forgive a coach if that coach lied to him or put him on the wrong track. And for years, he did a fantastic job. But then as mock drafts got incredibly popular, it got to the point where, you know, like Tom Telesco is not helping anybody with who they're going to pick at six. Dave Caldwell with the Jaguars, he is not going to help anybody. He's not telling his best friend. I wrote the other day, Dave Caldwell doesn't tell his wife who they're going to pick. So basically, it's a dart throw. And if I can ever, like last year, I got 9 players matched to their team in the first round of my draft. It's the best I'd ever done. And it was an incredible, no one really realizes that. Nobody really cares. But that to me, I was incredibly proud of that. If I got 4 or 5 this year, I would be absolutely thrilled. Obviously, you think that the top two of the draft are going to be there. But then after that, I think it's because there are so few times for these NFL general managers, scouts, coaches to get together in this postseason, to have a drink and to exchange ideas about who they like, who they don't like. That is why the information, in my opinion, this year was really lacking and why all mock drafts this year, I believe, are going to be dart throws.
It's interesting, Peter, because of the time that the evaluators spend, not just together, but the private time with the players and those pro days and those workouts. Do you feel that that has left a little bit broader reach in terms of which players are going to be taken middle to the end of the first round in this year's draft?
Yeah, I believe, Mike, that if you take the top five tackles, there's going to be at least five tackles picked in the first round. And if you end with Josh Jones of Houston, who started, I think, 45 games at left tackle in college football, which is unbelievable. But if you take the top five tackles, I would bet right now that there would be 25 iterations, one through five. You know, that there are so many changes and so many people who feel differently about their boards this year. And I think a lot of that is because Daniel Jeremiah said it on Twitter the other day. It was a great thought, and he's exactly right. So much of the groupthink has been eliminated this year because these guys haven't spent a lot of time together.
I'm not going to go through each one of Peter's picks. You can go to NBCSports.com, the Football Morning in America pick, mock, to see pick by pick. But I want to go after one and two, Peter, because, as you said, a lot of folks thinking Joe Burrow to Cincinnati, Chase Young, who's going to join us here in a little bit, to Washington at two. Every draft, I always point out, has pivot points. I feel number three is a pivot point because does somebody come to get Tua? Is it Justin Herbert? Miami's interest there. You have Herbert with a trade with Detroit at three. Explain your thinking on the move there.
The trade is only because, look, I think if they both stay at 3 and 5, it's very likely that Okuda goes three. It's either going to be Okuda or Derrick Brown, I think, to Detroit. Either Okuda goes three or Justin Herbert, and Justin Herbert goes to Miami. The reason I made the trade is if you've been working for 3 years to find your generation's Dan Marino, and maybe he is, maybe he isn't. Maybe he's going to be great, maybe he won't. But if you've been working for 3 years and plotting and trading to do that with your quarterback, and you've got 6 picks in the top 70, small price to pay, really, to ensure that you would get, that you would get your guy. If indeed Justin Herbert is the guy, and all you'd have to trade is the 39th pick in the draft, to me, my feeling is that would be a fair rate of return, because Detroit is still going to be able to get probably the same guy they would. And again, that trade might not happen, but I think for Miami to have a little peace of mind when GM Chris Greer and owner Stephen Ross go to bed Wednesday night, that's a trade, in my opinion, that I think makes sense.
If you're Detroit, could you get one of Miami's other ones?
Maybe, but I mean, I think it's one of those things that if Miami plays hardball and then you don't get the 39th pick. I mean, look at what Detroit really wants to do in this draft, Mike. They'd really like to get a long-term guard, I believe. They'd like to get a long-term running back. And if you could get the best guard in the draft and get one of the top 3 or 4 running backs in the draft and still get Okuda, I'd be okay with that if I were, if I were Bob Quinn, the general manager of the Lions.
So, Peter, when I was working the draft broadcast and getting lied to this week by folks and down different roads and all that stuff, you try to sift through that, I came to the conclusion that there were two things to look at trying to analyze a draft. One was, as I said, a pick that's a pivot point. And the second is a player that's a pivot player. In other words, Tua this year. Do teams come up to get Tagovailoa? Are they afraid because of the injury and they couldn't work him out, or they couldn't test him individually? So that's the next big question to me as I look at mock drafts, and I see that you have him with New England. What are you thinking there?
Well, my thinking is that over this past weekend, I talked to 12 general managers and several coaches, and all of them had different feelings about Tua Tagovailoa, about where he should go, where he would go. I didn't find many people, including some who know the Miami Dolphins pretty well, thinking that he would go to Miami. And honestly, if I had 10 or 11 people over the weekend, Mike, who said, yeah, Dolphins, they love Tua, I probably would have put him to Miami. But a clear majority felt that the Dolphins are going to go with Herbert. And again, you know what? Maybe that's Chris Greer, the Miami general manager, planting those seeds because he wants people to believe that. We'll find out. But Mike, the reason why I gave him to the Patriots is that if he falls and if he stops fall, if he continues to fall, if he gets to 12, 13, 14, look at Bill Belichick's relationship with Nick Saban. Nick Saban loves Tua Tagovailoa. He loves his competitiveness. He loves his drive, his ability to come back from injury. He loves everything about him. And in my opinion, that's exactly what he would tell Bill Belichick. And if you watch the tape of Tua when he's healthy, he's a great football player. So then you decide, okay, is maybe trading next year's one and worth it, this year's one and next year's one, to get a guy who could be, you know, a great player for the next 10 or 12 years in the NFL? Now, you're taking a risk. You are. But I just thought, it seems to me anyway, the kind of gamble that Bill Belichick very well might take. I have no inside information. All it is just a projection that if I were Bill Belichick and I saw Tua falling, I would say, I want this guy.
Peter, two other points here real quick. Miami has 14 picks, New England 12. They have the two teams with the most picks in this draft. Trading will feel a little different because of the virtual nature of this draft. Do you think we'll see more normal or less amount of trading on the clock because of the technology issues?
I think it'll be close to normal. Mike, there's so many redundancies in how teams can communicate. And, you know, look, everybody said, man, how's Dave Gettleman going to handle Microsoft Teams and Zoom and all that stuff? I'll tell you how he's going to handle it. I don't know, but he can do this too. He can pick up the phone and he can call a number that's been programmed into his phone, which is Ken Fiore's cell phone number, who will be in Garden City, Long Island. He's the guy who's in charge of collecting the draft choices. And he'll pick up the phone and he'll say, hey, Ken, Dave Gettleman, we're taking Tristan Wirfs here at number 4, okay? Yeah, okay, good. Thanks, Dave. See ya. I mean, is that really very hard? I don't think so. And as far as trading goes, you know, I don't know any general manager in the NFL who isn't going to have either two phones at his disposal so that he can hear from people at a fairly normal rate. So I would anticipate there'd be a lot of trades. As many as normal, maybe not quite, but I don't think it's going to limit people too much.
And they're going through that mock exercise today with all the decision makers, so they'll get comfortable with how it works. Number of receivers in the first round, number of offensive tackles. Will Roger Goodell get booed at home? All those things in Peter's column, Football Morning in America, at NBCSports.com. Lastly, Peter, the Michael Jordan documentary, The Last Dance, first two episodes aired last night. 2 of 10 parts. If you followed basketball then or now or sports, it's fascinating. It's interesting. Who's the NFL individual that you would love to see a 10-part documentary on?
Well, I've got to answer that with a qualifier, okay, Mike, because the reason that this film was able to be made is because Michael Jordan and the Bulls allowed a film crew inside their team.
Yes, sir.
Basically for a season, right?
Right.
And so I looked at that and I've thought about this question. What I would want Vince Lombardi play, you know, his last game as coach of the New York Giants is the greatest game ever played, you know, as an assistant coach of the Giants. He goes to Green Bay and he forms the biggest dynasty of all time. He coaches under Red Blake at West Point. He's got a dream. He was involved in the NFL as it became giant. And he's a legendary, mythic figure. He's the guy I would want to know about. I just don't think there's enough video out there. You know, that's really before NFL films hit its prime. But he's the guy who I think would be the most fun to dive into.
That would be fascinating. I was thinking about that a little bit. I was thinking Brady at first because there is a lot of video that he's taken. But Bill Belichick would be the one for me. I'd love to see a 10-part because so many
people talk
about the
Patriot
way and
the experience. And there's a lot of video out because Belichick has allowed NFL films in his life. There's a lot of stuff in a vault in Mount Laurel, New Jersey, of Bill Belichick that I don't know that it'll ever see the light of day. But that is the one guy who has stored up a lot of footage, and it could really be great one day.
It would be so interesting and fascinating. Another topic for another time. Check out Peter's column. We'll talk to you during the week. Peter, thanks so much as always.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Peter King there. When we come back, from Ohio State to the NFL, maybe number two will be the number two pick in the draft. That's Washington's. Chase Young is the name. He's the guest as we continue on Lunch Talk Live.
I tell you, when God put together that guy, he said, I'm going to make one of the best defensive ends to ever play college football, and I think he's going to carry on in the NFL. He's got it all.
Pretty strong comments from Urban Meyer on the Redskins Talk podcast, NBC Sports Washington. You can get caught up on all things going on with the team that is the number two pick in the draft, and a lot of conversation about number two from Ohio State, Chase Young, who joins us here on the show. Chase, you've heard that comment from Urban Meyer about you. It's a nice words from your former coach who recruited you.
Yeah, definitely. Coach Meyer, that's my guy, man. You know, one of the guys who always pushed me to play like I played this past year. And just to, you know, for me to go out and do it, it feels good just to, you know, achieve some of those things that he always wanted me to be.
So it's Monday. Did you wake up, because every day is feeling the same to all of us, right? Did you wake up feeling any different knowing that this is the week that the draft is coming here a few days away?
It's definitely different, man. It's different, but it's a feeling that I can't put in words, I would say. You know, working for this my whole life. I started playing football when I was six. So, you know, I'm just going to have to wait, you know, till my name is called to, you know, to really feel, you know, to see what that feeling is going to be like. So I'm just saying, I'm just really excited, man, and blessed to, you know, be in this moment.
Obviously, the difference with everyone being quarantined and staying at home, those visits that you would have made to teams are happening more like this via video conference. Has that process been anything challenging for you in terms of the repetition of it all?
Nah, not challenging at all. You know, just a Zoom call, and you know, they, you know, we just have a conversation, you know, talk ball, but nothing too challenging. You know, other than trying to, you know, figure out how to work Zoom, I think that's the biggest challenge of it all. But other than that, everything real cool.
Have you felt like you're getting to know the GMs, the owners, the coaches, the people who've been getting on these calls with you?
Yeah, definitely. I'm definitely getting more comfortable, you know, with talking to them. You know, just really going deep in and talking about a ball. You know, talking about other guys in the league and stuff like that. So I'm definitely, you know, real comfortable with talking to the GMs and the coaches, you know, the teams who I've talked to.
So since you're so good at it, give us a little sample of it. If I was a player personnel, GM, a head coach, and I asked you, hey, Chase, what do I need to know about Chase Young, the person who's going to be coming to our football team, what would you tell me?
I would say my mom, you know, she raised me to be a respectful, you know, young man. She taught me how to treat women, you know, and that's just meaning I'm a gentleman, and always respect authority. And you know, coming in, you know, if you were a coach, and I would say if you were to draft me, then I'd be coming in with an intense focus. I feel like I'm a fierce competitor. And, you know, I'm just ready to put my best foot forward and show the next level what I can do.
Tell me about where you grew up, because the DMV, the Washington, D.C. metro area has produced so many good athletes in so many sports. What is it about that area that, in your mind, has produced so many terrific high school, college, and now pro athletes?
So I'm from PG County, and I feel like you know, while we produce, you know, so many kids, I feel like it says we have a lot of, you know, great trainers all around Maryland. Two in particular that I, well, three in particular that I know about. My trainer, Gibson, performance training. I got my coach Paige. She used to work in the NFL, but he's around here now. And another dude named Myron Flowers. He trains like Stephon Diggs and his brother and a lot of other cats. So I feel like our trainers around here are just real good. And you know, when kids start training early, you know, that's definitely a jump start. In what they'll do down the road. So I just feel like a lot of our trainers around here have a lot to do with it. And, you know, just the kids. You know, everybody around here wants to be a football player, and everybody around here wants to be good at it. So I feel like if you put those two together, then you're going to come out with some surefire kids.
And you grew up real close to where the Washington Redskins play their home games. Did you grow up a Redskins fan?
So I grew up, I was a fan of players. So when I was growing up and the Redskins was playing, I liked Clint Portis, Sean Taylor, Santana Moss, Fred Smoot. a lot of older guys, man. I was a fan of players. But I did go to a Redskins game at one time. I got some tickets for Christmas from my dad. Because I'd never been to an NFL game before, but other than that experience, I really didn't have a team.
And given that they have the number two pick, and we've seen a whole bunch of mock drafts with you connected to them, what have your friends, your family, your people been like saying, hey, you know, you could be right down the road here and kind of come back home for your football career? How much of that conversation is going on?
Yes, we talk about it often, I would say. When we do talk about it, you know, we always say it's pros and cons to it. Pros, you know, playing in front of my friends and family, close to home. And cons, you have to understand that everybody in your area, you know, isn't rooting for you and isn't for you. You know, it's a lot of haters. Around where I'm from, just in everywhere, you know, when you get success, you're going to have haters around you and fake love. So, that's what I try to, that's what we talk about a lot. And, I'm cool with it all. So I'm ready for whatever comes.
That's good perspective in terms of preparation for the realities of a lot of people asking for your time. I want to go back to your Ohio State days a little bit. Urban Meyer, who we mentioned earlier, put out a really neat picture on Twitter last week. It's of you chasing down Joe Burrow when he was at Ohio State before he went to LSU in a scrimmage or a spring game. That is pretty cool that you guys could be the 1 and 2 pick in the draft, and there you are on opposite sides in an inter-squad setup. What can you share with us about Joe and the things you've observed along the awards trail this season as you watched his success?
When Joe left and went to LSU, we all expected Joe to be great. The way Joe works, is unmatched. Joe, he's a fierce competitor, as we've seen this past season. And, you know, that's what we all expected, man. Joe can go. I knew that even that spring game. That's what I was trying to get to him so fast, because I knew it was a chance for them to make a play for them, because he was that quarterback. So, Joe is a competitor, hard worker, and somebody that's going to continue that on the next level.
And we've talked about Washington having the number two pick and a lot of folks linking you with them. And Dwayne Haskins there already, another guy who you know quite well from your Ohio State days. What has he been able to share with you about the league and about playing with Washington specifically?
He just said, come in. Everything is really a grind. Just come in and, be in your grind mode and just put your head down and just be ready to go. As a young guy coming in, soak up everything you can soak up, because ultimately that's going to help you in your first year. In regards to playing with the Redskins, obviously, he wants me to get drafted by them. So, you know, he's always talking about that, but, you know, that's about it. Yeah.
Buckeye alumni base in Washington. Hey, I want to shout out Old Spice. They're donating $320,000 and joining with you today. They're donating it to the United Way on your behalf and then the other 32 NFL teams and their rookies, so you can help you guys start charitable efforts around the league. We know that the NFL draft is a big charitable arm to it because of everything that's going on. That's a wonderful thing that you and Old Spice and everyone's doing. I want to give you acknowledgement for that. I want to talk about draft night, because draft night is usually a great suit. You go, this year it would have been Vegas, hang out with Burrow and the other guys are going to get picked real high, and you have that moment to remember forever. How are you going to replicate that at home? Are you going to get all dressed out in that suit that you would have worn? What's the plan for draft night for you?
Yeah, so, you know, Gucci was supposed to do my suit. It's in Italy right now, so, you know, I'll probably wear something by John Elliott. It's a designer out of California, I believe, for the draft. But
okay.
how I'm going to do it is basically I'm going to have 10 people in my house, because, you know, that's the number, the limit. And I'm going to have basically a drive-in with the rest of my family and friends outside of my house. So I'm going to put a projector.
Really?
You know, I'm going to get a hit on the side of my house. And basically, I'm going to have like a sit-in or a drive-in for the rest of my family and friends. So then when I get drafted, then I can come outside. And he said, that's legal. You know what I'm saying? So you can come outside and, you know, as long as you're outside and 6 feet away, you know, everything will be okay. So that's the plan right now.
I love that idea. That's awesome. Don't be caught up because the suit's caught up in Italy and you can't get here. Look good and have people around you in the safest, most legal way possible. I love it. Chase, it was great to watch you play this year and your 16 and a half sacks, setting an Ohio State record. Look forward to hearing your name called early on draft night. And more importantly, we look forward to seeing you in the league when we're out there with Sunday Night Football and Football Night in America. Thanks for a few minutes and best of luck this week, man.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
When we come back, we'll talk football, college, and a little bit of pro as well. Dan Mullen, the guy who coached Dak Prescott, remember, of course, at Mississippi State. He's now the head of the Gators. A lot going on with college football and its future for this year. Dan Mullen joins us as we continue.
CJ Henderson, why is he at the top of your list?
Well, I just think he's the most physically gifted of the group. I mean, when you just talk about speed to close on the ball, great feet that are just smooth. He's got incredibly long arms, can jam you at the line of scrimmage. Physically, has it all. The hips are greasy smooth. There's no weakness to this guy's football game.
And he covered a bunch of good players in the SEC, a bunch of receivers you'll see go early. The Chris Sims podcast is available. He and Paul Burmeister break down the corners there. You see C.J. Henderson from Florida, his number one. And interesting, Jeff Okuda from Ohio State, who some think could go to Detroit in the third overall pick, is Chris's number three cornerback. So check out Chris's podcast for all of that stuff. Let's talk more about C.J. Henderson with his head coach, Dan Mullen, the head coach of the Florida Gators, joins us now as he's hopefully getting ready to start his third season as the head coach there in Gainesville. Have you been taking a lot of calls on Henderson, Coach?
We have. We've gotten a bunch of them. He's, you know, the one thing about him, I mean, you look at his skill set, what he has great length. He has unbelievable speed, you know, but if you get to know him, he's a really quiet kid. And I think so that as part of the interviews mm-hmm. that have gone on, a lot of the guys said, hey, here's this guy who doesn't talk a whole lot. He's really quiet, laid back. Kid, but he's a competitor on the field when you get him out there, and he's a hard worker, and you know, I think he's going to make a big time NFL corner.
How would you characterize the amount of calls you're taking from your friends in the NFL compared to a normal year where they could have had more pro days, etc.?
I think you're getting maybe a little bit more, just, you know, because some of they're not getting every type of interview, the in-person interviews. They're having to do them all virtually. And obviously the workouts, missing that out. I think, you know, if you look at the draft every year, like recruiting, like for us, it's an inexact science. And So one of the things that you have to do is they try to eliminate as many variables as possible. And when you start now, if you've eliminated pro days and the individual interviews, you know, bringing the guys to your place to interview them and sit and meet with them, I think that's changed a lot. And it's put probably a little bit more doubt in some of the coaches and the GM's minds.
We see a couple of the guys who will likely be drafted from your team last year. Van Jefferson, a wide receiver, is on there. We've talked a lot about a significant number of wide receivers going early in this draft. You were the offensive coordinator for a couple of national championships there at Florida. You've always been a progressive offensive coach. What is it about the college receivers now that, in addition to the preponderance of passing, it feels like they're more ready to jump right into the NFL and make an impact? Why so?
Well, I think a lot of guys now with the passes, the pass offense that's already gone down to the high school level, I think you see guys that are probably have learned and had the opportunity to get a little bit more polished within a passing offense earlier in their career. You know, and then you just look at some of the guys that just go work at it. And I know this year's a rich draft with talent, but it goes beyond talent. It's about the guys' abilities to go out there and work and get better every single day, and to maximize their talents. And Van Jefferson's a guy that certainly does that every single day. He's the guy that maximizes his talent level. You know, I mean, one of the first guys to practice, one of the last guys to leave practice every day. And, you know, and on top of that, became a great special teams player for us this year.
Which will be a big factor for a rookie trying to jump in the league. All right, everybody's got to make the most of this opportunity, which is coaches. That's how you're portraying what we're all dealing with right now. What have you done in terms of trying to connect with your players and trying to get them ready for a potential season this fall?
Well, I think one of the benefits that we have is I've been, you know, we've established the program a little bit. So I think the guys understand what our expectations are, what we need of them. So, you know, I think our strength staff sends out workouts for them to do each week, and hopefully the guys are following through and doing their workouts. We just started in the last couple of weeks our virtual position meetings. So the guys are getting the opportunity to go in and really, you know, do all of our spring installations. Even though we don't get to do it on the field or do it with live stuff, they get to sit and learn it in meetings. And just, you know, one of the things we talk about is really worry about what we can control right now. Don't worry about what you can't control. You know, you can find a way to get bigger, faster, stronger. You can find a way to get, you know, make sure you're eating healthy and taking care of your health. And you can find a way that you can become a student of the game and be a better, you know, understand the game and be smarter football player when we get back on campus than when we left. And if we worry about those things, we'll come out of this on a positive way, getting ready for this season to start, and hopefully have a great year.
As a head coach, how does the virtual teaching, if you will, impact the amount of players you can be in touch with and observe?
You know, it just makes it hard. You know, the one thing I've been able to do is, because of all the virtual meetings and our coaches set them up around mm-hmm. different class schedules. So, you know, our different position coaches have different meetings at different times during the day. So I get to sit in on most of the meetings. I just click in and I, you know, on all the different Zoom meetings, and I just click in and sit in and watch the meeting. And, you know, I can be watching film. I can be taking care of other things, but I always have somebody's meeting playing in the background. So I can, it's great for me to get in and just, you know, really get the opportunity to be in every single position meeting that I don't always get to do, you know, when we're on campus.
We've got a ton of questions ahead. What's the biggest one in your mind in trying to figure out how to be ready for whenever a football season might start?
Well, you know, I think the biggest, most important thing is that we get through this safely. You know, and I know because everybody's antsy to get back to life as normal, but for us to get through all of this safely, you know, and then what we've done, you know, I guess as the head coach, I mean, I sit down and write up every different scenario and say, okay, if we get back to life as normal on this date, what is our schedule going to be on each one of those to get us best prepared to go perform at a high level this season? You know, and that's what we do. And you know, I think the more everybody stays safe, the faster we have an opportunity to get back to football.
What's the internal urgency for you? Because you come in 10 in a Peach Bowl, 11 in the Orange Bowl, and now this thing is kind of growing again, right? It feels like the Gators are coming, and this is a big stop sign for everybody, and that's the important deal. But what is the most important thing for you to try to pick up where that Orange Bowl victory left off on an 11-win season for the 2020 season for your guys?
Well, I've talked to our guys about really just trying to stay positive. You know, if we can stay positive in what we're doing and find a way, to improve yourself in the little things. You know, it is what it is. And this is an adversity that we're all going through right now. Are we making the best of the adversity and finding a way to get better? And, you know, because during the season, we're going to face adversities in the during games. We're going to face adversity during the season. We face adversities in life. And successful people find ways to handle adversities better than anybody else. And that's what we need to do as a team. And that we need to do as a bunch of individuals is find a way to deal with this adversity as best as possible and find a way to get better at it. You know, I mean, find a way. I mean, I'm enjoying spending a lot of time with my family. I have a new respect for teachers. I find a way that I'm a pretty good coach, I think, coaching guys the game of football. But when it comes to new math, I'm not the person you want to call.
So your homeschool grade is not as high as it can be, but you're working at it, right? You're a coach. You're getting better every day.
I'm trying to find ways to get better. I come up with a solution, and my kids will look at me and say, that's not how we do it now. And I'm like, I don't know. I figured out the answer. I don't know how to do all the work.
You're not alone. Well, Coach Dak Prescott, the great success at Mississippi State. And I can't have the head coach of football at Florida on this day without wishing a happy 75th to the head ball coach, Steve Spurrier's birthday today. So I'm sure you echo that shout out to the HBC and a happy 75th to Steve.
It's great having him around. And, you know, I don't know, when you see guys with as much energy, I hope I have that energy at 75 because he wants to still be out there on that field coaching ball every day.
Absolutely. So happy birthday to Steve, his wife, Jared, two of the great people in college athletics over the years. Dan, thanks for your time. We appreciate it. Good luck teaching that math, and we hope to see you down in the swamp here this fall.
I'm looking forward to it. Thanks so much. Go Gators.
Yeah, Dan Mullen joining us, the head coach of Florida. When we come back, remember Randall Cunningham, the football star. The stars on the other side of him, one of the great Olympians in the U.S., will join us when we come back.
When I was breaking Gordie Howe's record, my dad said to me at one point in time, your record is going to be broken one day, and I hope you have as much class and dignity as Gordie Howe has had with you breaking his record. And I hope I do. I hope that I'm the first guy to be able to shake his hand when he does break my record. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind that he has a great chance to do that.
Big stuff from the great one, Wayne Gretzky, and the great eight, Alex Ovechkin, their first ever joint interview. Great one, great eight, the great Catherine Tappan joining us 5 Eastern time for that NBCSN today. We are super excited to watch that. Never before those two guys interviewed at the same time, so it will be a blast. Well, speaking of joining us together, Vashti Cunningham and Randall Cunningham. Randall, a 16-year career in the NFL. Vashti, one of the top high jumpers in the U.S., definitely one to watch for the Tokyo Olympics, pushed back a year. They both join us from Las Vegas right now, where I would imagine the streets are empty and quiet, feels a little bit different in Las Vegas. Vashti, what has it been like out there the last month or so?
Out here in Vegas, it has been just kind of slow. You know, everything's just kind of been closed down and not too many people out. It's just different than, you know, anything that I've ever seen growing up here in Las Vegas.
Randall, what was the reaction when you found out that the Olympics were going to be postponed and then put on the calendar 1 year later?
Mixed emotions. On the one hand, I'm thinking we're prepared and ready to go. Vashti's ready. On the other hand, with my son Randall II coming back, it gives him time to heal up a little bit more and get adjusted to jumping again because he's excited and fired up and ready to go.
Vashti, what was it like emotionally for you as you were waiting to find out and then did find out the eventual reschedule?
I definitely thought that it was a possibility that the Olympics would be getting postponed. The time that it actually was announced that it was postponed and, you know, versus the times of me kind of trying to figure it out myself in my head, it was just very different, you know, hearing it and reading it that this season we've been preparing for a year, and since the last Olympics is moved to the next year. It was just something that was just very, very weird to hear.
You see some of the successes for Vashti with dad coaching 8 times the indoor or the outdoor U.S. champ. She competed in Rio, 3rd in the world's last year, so things were really building. Randall, as a dad, can you go back and take us, not to your football background, but your high jump background and how that's impacted this portion of your life?
It was a lot different back then. You know, back in the 80s, and late 70s and 80s, I finished up in 81 jumping about 6'10". I don't compare to my kids. I was okay. I wouldn't have gotten a scholarship for track and field. They train a lot harder than I did back then, and I was really focused on football. But looking at the way things are today in sports and being able to watch my daughter go against those throughout the world and be ranked number 4 in the world and number 1 in America, it's just it's amazing. The trips we've taken to Rome and Monaco and been in London so many times, and just be in Venice and Italy, and just to really have fun as a family, one-on-one time with my daughter has been amazing. So this whole experience is great.
And Vashti, the way you train, if you could explain to folks that it might not be the most modern training in terms of what other high jumpers around the world are doing, but it's one that you know under your roof works. Explain what you do.
Yes, so me and my dad and my brothers, my brother, we train a little bit different than the typical high jumper. We actually don't jump very much. We lift about 5 days of the week, and then a couple weeks out of the month, we might jump on a Tuesday and then just keep lifting for the next 2 weeks and then jump a different Tuesday. So it's really just the consistency of the strength in our body and, you know, maintaining everything that we've been pushing our body to rather than wearing it down jumping.
And Randall, you used to do a workout that was different from the other players, especially your time in Philadelphia, and that's what your kids are doing now.
Yeah, I took the old school approach, and then what I did is I did a lot of research after I finished my career, and I combined what I did, what I learned through when I ran the West Coast offense and the way we would recover. I kind of used what we did weight-wise and then incorporated a lot of different exercises for the legs. But at the same time, the jumping is not a lot, as Vashti says. And the recovery is very important. And the preparation prior to going in the track meet, the rest is very important. And then taking the proper nutrition is so important. A lot of people see Vashti and they go like, oh, she's so skinny. Well, she chooses to eat very healthy on her own, and then I try to put the proteins and things in her body that will sustain her. And so the approach with the lifting and not jumping, she may jump on a year 10 times the whole year, like once a month. That's it in a track meet. So we're trying to preserve her. I'm not trying to burn her out as a young kid. She's only 22 years old.
Vashti, last before I leave you, your dad is your dad, your coach, a pastor. Is it hard to separate sometimes which message is coming your way at a certain time?
Man, when I first signed professionally with track and field, it was very hard for me to separate it all. And just, you know, as God has allowed us to keep working together and growing together and allowed me to mature and understand everything that he's saying and why he's saying it, then it's become so much easier to separate it and to hear what I need to hear rather than what I don't want to hear. So it's definitely something that has been in the works, and I'm really happy that we have, you know, got to the balance that we have right now.
Well, we hope for Tokyo to be on time, because whether it's your fashion taste, your desire to be a National Geographic photographer down the line, you have so many varied interests. It's one of the great stories of the Olympics and an awesome father-daughter story that we're able to share. Randall, great to catch up with you. Vashti, thank you both so much, and we look forward to seeing you on the road to Tokyo next year.
Thank you, Mike.
Keep up the good work, brother.
Thank you. Randall Cunningham, former second-round pick. Vashti Cunningham, the top high jumper in the United States. Our Olympic Games week continues on NBCSN. We return to Beijing tonight, beginning at 7 Eastern time. All the way through the night, a bunch of Olympians have been tweeting and Instagram commenting on all this and watching it back. Hope you join us tonight. There's Mark Ingram. He's going to join us. We'll talk a little football with the running back from the Ravens as Lunch Talk continues after this. Mark Ingram was a Heisman Trophy winner when he was coming out of college, and he was picked late in the first round in 2011, spent 8 years with New Orleans, now the last couple with the Baltimore Ravens. He joins us on Lunch Talk Live. How are things down in Florida? Everybody okay by you?
Yeah, we're healthy and we're blessed. So we're just praying for this thing to, you know, go by and that everybody stays healthy.
As we all are. Thanks for a couple of minutes. So you're coming off the Heisman when you get drafted, right? And you wait till late in the first round. It's draft week, so I'm sure some of those thoughts come back. What would you tell some of the college kids who are going to get drafted mid-20s, late-20s, what that wait is like that they may be experiencing in a few nights here?
Yeah, it's definitely an anxious time. You know, of course you want to be a high pick, and but you're going to go to the right place and just enjoy the moment, being with your family, having a chance to accomplish your goals that you've been working for ever since you was little. Just enjoy the moment. Don't stress yourself too much, even though it will be stressful, kind of anxious, especially when you're waiting, you know. But just enjoy it, man. We're blessed to be able to continue your career in the NFL. So just enjoy the moment with your family, and it's a great opportunity.
I thought, Mark, you said something really big, because you end up sometimes in a place that's the right place for you. What was so good about New Orleans for you for 8 seasons?
Man, it was just a great organization, just great locker room, just some great pros that I had the opportunity to learn from as a young player, from Drew Brees to Marcus Colston, Roman Harper, Will Smith, just a number of, you know, great pros who had long, you know, illustrious careers, John Vilma, just a number of guys who had an impact on me, helping me grow, be a better pro, learn how to, you know, get my schedule down, learn to get my routine down, and just how to prepare at a high level. And I think just going to New Orleans helped me become a better pro, obviously helped me learn to have a winning culture, and I'm grateful for my time in New Orleans, man. I grew so much as a player and a person in my 8 years in New Orleans, and I have so much love for that city and that organization. It was nothing but good to me during my time.
And you said culture, and that word gets thrown out every time a new coach comes and something happens in the NFL, right? You leave a really well-established culture in New Orleans and go to one in Baltimore that we've watched adjust, because it was the players who set that culture for so long. And John Harbaugh has come in and done something different with it and still made it player-driven. What'd you find when you got behind the doors there of the Ravens organization that contributes to their successful culture?
I think they just, you know, treat you like family, and they treat you like a grown man. They let you be yourself, but you need to come to work prepared to prepare at a high level, to work at a high level, and they have the championship is the standard there. Being champions is the standard, and nothing less is acceptable. So the fact that they just allow people, you know, to be yourself, they give you everything that you need as a player to, you know, improve mentally, physically, and prepare yourself mentally and physically. You know, it's just a great organization from top to bottom. I'm thankful that I'm in a great organization who appreciates me and takes care of me. And just a great locker room full of guys who understand the value of hard work, the value of togetherness, and the value and how hard it is to win a championship. So I'm just thankful to be I'm thankful I left one great organization and I'm in another one, man. So I have nothing but high praises for the Ravens. I'm glad I'm a Raven. You know, I'm trying to be a Raven for a long time.
Over 1,000 yards, 10 touchdowns. But you put a big brother arm around Lamar Jackson over the last few seasons that really has resonated with a lot of us. What was it about that kid when you first met him that made you connect with him the way you have?
I think he was just real, man. He's just real. He's a genuine person. He has the desire to be great. He has the desire to want to win a championship. He has the desire to be the best. And those are all things that we have in common. And he's just a humble guy, down to earth. He doesn't think he's better than anybody. He has a special relationship with each and every player on the team, each and every coach, even the staff, you know, equipment and in the cafeteria. He's just a lovable guy, a likable guy, very down to earth and humble. And just all those variables, I think, brought us together and just, you know, I just want the best for him, man. And, you know, he's just great, man. I think his career is just starting, and he's going to keep getting better and better and better. So I'm just proud to be there by him, and I'm just trying to make his job easy for him.
You guys had a great year, and then the sting of the loss in the playoffs. We say goodbye to you right away. We move on to the next round of the playoffs. What is that like to live with a sting like that for several months after a game where you lose in the playoffs where you're favored?
Yeah, obviously it's difficult just to be able to have the season that we had, the success that we had, and to go into the first round and not be able to take advantage of the opportunity. That hurts, you know. It's Super Bowl or bust, and we lost in the first round that we played in. So that was difficult, and I had a couple stinging losses, one in Minnesota in the divisional, and then obviously the Rams game in New Orleans. Those hurt, man. Just this one, you know, last year, that's 3 years in a row of tough losses in the playoffs, man. So all you can do is use it as a motivating factor. Start from square one this season and develop the camaraderie, develop the togetherness, and just go for it again, man. We feel like we have the team. We're adding some pieces, and we feel like we have the team to go ahead and be champions, but we got to do it.
Yeah, you've made enough deposits in the adversity bank account. You can start cashing on them now. Hey, as we wrap up, Christian McCaffrey signs a 4-year extension, so he's under contract through 2025. You've lasted for a long time in this league as a productive and really good running back. What are the essentials to let your shelf life continue as a running back and still be an impact player?
I mean, I think I was blessed, man. Like you said, one of the good things about me going to New Orleans was I was in a kind of a RB by committee system. So, you know, I wanted to be the bell cow and I wanted to be featured and have all the touches, but at the end of the day, I think God works in mysterious ways, and I was able to prolong my career where I feel great going into my 10th year. I feel like I'm still getting better, that I still have my best football ahead of me in my 10th season. So I just think you have to take care of your body, you know, train the right way, and I think he does all those things right. He goes out there, he plays at a high level, he produces at a high level. He's a high volume of their offense for the past 2-3 years. Only two people in the history of the game have 300 catches in their first 3 years, him and Mike Thomas. So he deserves the extension he got, and he deserves the everything that he just signed for, man, just because his production, his leadership, and the person he is on and off the field. So I'm a Christian McCaffrey fan. He deserves the deal he got, and I'm sure he's going to keep playing at a high level for those guys for a long time.
A lot of Mark Ingram fans out there. Thanks for a few minutes. Stay well, and we'll talk to you down the road here.
All right, thank you. Y'all stay safe.
All right, Mark Ingram, Baltimore Ravens. You all stay safe as well. Mike Florio, Jordan Palmer, and B.J. Armstrong are going to be on the Rich Eisen Show coming up. Tomorrow, we have Rodney Harrison, James Franklin, the Penn State coach, Julian Aquara, and Carly Lloyd. We hope to see you then. Thanks for watching Lunch Talk Live. Rich Eisen Show next.